Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting, an experience so fun it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies...
Yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about science fiction.
And you scrim with, like, a beautiful comb over.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. That's SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. On Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Player FM, and Stitcher.
Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited to talk this week about the next big summer release, X-Men Apocalypse, with the biggest mutant I know, Mark Ahn.
Let's rebuild this world into a better one, Patrick. In the form of Junesploitation.
Yes, happy Junesploitation.
Happy Junesploitation, everybody.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome to our made-up holiday that lasts a month.
Today is June 1st when this podcast comes out, which means we are kicking off our fourth annual Junesploitation celebration, an entire month devoted to exploitation, genre, cult, cinema. It doesn't have to be about those movies. You can really watch any kinds of movies you want. But if you go to fthismovie.net and click on the Junesploitation tab at the top of the page, there will be a calendar there, and each day is devoted to a different theme. So one day might be cars, one day might be cops, one day might be slasher movies, one day, several days will be free spaces, and you can spot the free spaces by identifying the Giggler, RIP the Giggler. And you know that those are free spaces. It's super fun. And then you go to that day's thread and leave a little review of the movie that you watched. And we all share in the fun of Junesploitation.
And the fun part of it is that so often, I think when we're all watching movies, we waste 90% of our allotted time just looking around for what movie to watch.
Sure.
And there's no like scorecard. You don't get like points. There's no like, although we should make up a game maybe. Let's just watch these kinds of movies.
Yeah.
And we're just all going to have a community conversation about it. But it's just an easy way. Like, we're making your programming choices for you. We're like, look, today, watch movies about Nazis.
Yes.
All right, done. And we've like helped you make a decision. So
done.
Just think about all your Nazi movies.
You're welcome, done. Everyone.
Right.
You know, instead of making a game.
Dead snow. Dead snow.
Instead of making a game, what we could do maybe next year is just create a Junesploitation bingo card.
Yeah.
And so every time, like, you're watching a movie and some, you know, there's a beheading or someone has sex with a dead body.
Oh,
like,
right.
It's weird that I went from one to right to necrophilia. I don't know.
I think that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Actually.
You know,
you don't need to convince me.
And then we just have to wait for a bingo. But then how do we keep everybody honest?
You could do it online, I guess.
I guess.
That sounds like someone else's job.
Yeah.
Where's Doug?
This sounds like too much work.
This sounds like...
Junesploitation bingo is canceled, everyone.
Right, we're done. Unless someone wants to volunteer.
Over before it began.
Look, if it's the right price, we'll pay for it. The right price is free $3.99.
So. We're going to be talking about X-Men Apocalypse in just a little bit. One quick announcement before we do. We talked about Junesploitation already. We are off and running on that. I want to mention two other quick things. One, make sure you check out the latest episode of How Is This Movie? That's over at howisthismovie.net, or you can find them on the iTunes store. And that is a podcast, a really terrific kind of film history podcast. It's more devoted to talking about how movies came together. hosted by our friend Dana Buckler, who's been a terrific supporter of F This Movie. Anyway, he was very nice and had me as a guest on his most recent episode to talk about the history of our show and then just some kind of general movie stuff, and had me do like an F Mary Kill with Christian Slater movies. And I feel confident in my choices, but I'm second guessing myself a little. But anyway, thank you to Dana for having me on. And everyone, make sure you check out How Is This Movie.
I want to know what happened with that F Mary Kill. But
yeah, I'm not going to spoil it.
No, you shouldn't.
You're going to have to listen.
I'm going to go find it.
How is this movie? Howisthismovie.net. Also, and I don't have all the details yet, but on, I guess this is our first formal announcement, although I did break it exclusively on, How Is This Movie, which will come out before this episode does. So
hey,
anyone who listens to that would know that. Okay. Anyway, July 9th, we are planning something. we all have, a kind of a mutual friend. It's actually a whole family that we are friends with, and they lost a member recently to a fight with breast cancer. And she was an amazing person and gave so much to so many people, and before she passed started a charity called the Magnolia Tree Foundation. And I was trying to think of, well, how can I help raise money for the Magnolia Tree Foundation? So what we're going to do on July 9th is an 18-hour live podcast-a-thon.
Oh, yeah.
So that's Saturday, July 9th. More details will be forthcoming, but there will be donation links that you can donate all proceeds to the Magnolia Tree Foundation. We're going to podcast from about 8 a.m. Central Time to about 2 a.m. Central Time live via, I think, YouTube Live. We're still kind of working out some of the details, but and have a revolving door of guests and special stuff planned.
And revolving doors.
Special things to come. Like I said, more details will be forthcoming on that, including where you can donate. But clear your schedule for July 9th, because I think it's going to be cool, or it could be a total train wreck. But as long as it raises money, I don't care.
Yeah, it's...
We're in it for the long haul.
Everything for the good of a good cause. It's a nice way to combine like our love for movies, and you get to help people out.
So. Yeah, and I get to talk for 18 hours straight,
which is what you normally do anyway.
Should be interesting.
Yeah, what you guys don't understand is that Patrick does. Like sometimes we just tell him like, "You're on the podcast." I hope you hear the air quotes, and then he just keeps talking, and he sits down here with his headphones on. And he just goes for 18 hours. He's talking anyway.
That's
so like
true.
We just happen to put the headphones on and turn it on live just for about an hour.
That's really only when you guys can't find a babysitter for me.
Right.
Anyway, so we'll look forward to more announcements about that. But clear your schedule, and hopefully you can join us for part of the day or all of it if you're a masochist. We're going to talk about X-Men Apocalypse, spoiler-free, for a couple minutes. We'll get into spoilers, but first, Mark, on.
Yeah, dude.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a couple of good things lately. Adam Risky and I went to go see Neighbors 2, about a week ago. And I know Adam's review is up on the site. I hadn't seen, although he told me that this is not a huge disadvantage, I hadn't seen Neighbors, the first one.
Okay.
So Neighbors 2 was okay. It was fun. I see what they were doing. But then Adam said, like, Neighbors is better. So then I went back and saw Neighbors. And he was right.
Okay.
That Neighbors was better. But it's fun. It's, I don't know what to say.
Well, so Neighbors 2 is one of my, what have you seen lately's?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah. I was talking about it.
And I saw Neighbors 1, and I don't remember it very well. My immediate memory is that I laughed more at Neighbors 2.
Sure.
But that may not be correct. Neighbors 1 may be a better movie. I honestly cannot remember. I had very low expectations for Neighbors 2, in part because comedy sequels are never great.
Sure.
And in part because Adam's review, I think, did a good job of kind of tempering my expectations. He was like, no, it's not horrible. They're trying. But, you know, it's not the best movie. And I was surprised at how much I did laugh, although it was... It's kind of two movies. One of the movies is very kind of set piece oriented. It's like a big tailgate chase scene.
Sure.
To recover some weed, or people jumping on airbags and flying up into the air, which is a callback from the first movie.
Right.
That stuff doesn't make me laugh. The stuff that was making me laugh was all of the kind of commentary about sexism and political correctness and characters realizing things that they've held true are actually completely outdated and sexist. I think Zac Efron is surprisingly funny. I think Rose Byrne is very funny, as she was in the first movie.
I urged Adam to make his entire review Rose Byrne centered.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed that he didn't do that. I'm just going to let him know on the air that I'm disappointed.
She had my favorite joke in the first Neighbors, which is like she's making up a song that she's singing about some other women being bitches or something. Am I remembering this correctly?
I don't know if I remember that.
You just saw it.
I know. It's been a long week.
But it's certainly not a great movie. I appreciate that they're trying to say some things. Adam had pointed out that it was very kind of sloppily made.
A little bit, yeah.
Which I totally agree with, and I actually feel like the first Neighbors is really... I remember seeing it just being like, wow, this comedies are really badly edited now. And I think it's because, I don't know for sure, but like I think it's because there's so much improvisation and ad-libbing going on that they're like cutting around jokes and trying to ADR jokes in from a different take. And it's like, it's just so sloppy in its construction. I remember feeling that about the first Neighbors. It's certainly true of Neighbors 2. And so that's a little bit frustrating. Like, it would be nice to see a comedy that's well made.
That's like thought of ahead of time.
Right.
Like with a script.
We don't get a ton of like formally well made comedies. That's Edgar Wright is great for that. You know, every joke you can tell is just really plotted out. But I laughed enough times in Neighbors 2 that I would consider it a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I wouldn't dissuade someone from going to see it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the humor that I liked as well, just to go along with your point, was, and this is just sort of a lot, you know, much more below the surface, but like their jokes about like getting older and like the difficulty of like raising a kid,
yes.
And but not like the difficulties of like, oh god, what kind of school is she going to go to, but just like their handling of, we're like adults and we have a child, how do we deal with this? And that stuff I think is actually pretty funny as well.
And that I liked that stuff in the first Neighbors, that they found themselves kind of trapped between like, well, we're not like young people anymore, but we don't feel like adults who are raising a family. We're kind of in this weird in-between thing. Right. There's a great scene where they're trying to go out and they end up like falling asleep in front of the door. I
think so. And they don't even make it out of the house.
Right. And there was such familiarity to that.
Oh yeah. So tired. It's like, oh my God, what time is it?
Right.
It's like 11.
And there's a scene in Neighbors 2 where they're laying in bed with their daughter and they're talking and then they both find themselves like spontaneously crying. And my wife and I were laughing very hard at that. There's just things that we could relate to.
Good times.
Yeah. We're always crying in bed is what
I'm
saying.
I'm just saying we need more Rose Byrne. Which is
well,
great,
luckily she's in every movie
yeah,
right now.
Best,
yeah.
What else did I see? I saw The Jungle Book, which was fine. Go see Jungle Book.
So many CGI animals.
Yeah, I felt like the kid. I don't want to bag on kid actors too much because
fuck that kid.
He's seven. I'm sure there's a Reddit.
Yeah,
about
but he
that
acts
kid.
Like he's six.
Yeah, what?
Get it together.
Come on. I felt like for part of the movie, the kid was sort of in a different show. Like he was on one of those Disney shows where he gives these like sort of overly precocious answers.
Ah, okay.
Of like,
got it.
Really? That's what you thought? I'm like, you're in a Jungle Book movie, kid. You're in the jungle.
Yeah.
No one from the jungle talks like that.
Yeah.
I don't know things
you're
about
like,
the jungle.
Welcome to the jungle.
Yeah. Right. Stop talking like you just like got
we
out.
We got fun and games.
Right. You just like left class and now you're talking to your friend down at the malt shop. Like you're in the jungle. Anyway, the kid's performance got better over the movie. I don't want to dissuade people from that. It's perfectly good stuff to take your kid to, that kind of stuff. Although I remember your comment about Jungle Book was fine, but if I wanted to see Jungle Book, I would just go see the cartoon, which is, that's okay. You know, that's fine too. Were you going to?
No, I'm in a weird place with Jungle Book because I'm like, it's fine. There's nothing I can, like, it's not that I'm really complaining about it, but there's nothing about it that compels me to say, like, wow, it's so good.
Sure.
Except, and maybe the 3D is great. I did not see it in 3D.
Sure.
I've heard that it's very good.
Sure.
And also, the special effects are very impressive when you consider that the kid was the only real thing anywhere in that movie.
Sure.
That's amazing. Like, that's unbelievable. But at a certain point, we end up taking that for granted now. Like, we're in such a weird place because for 10 minutes, you're like, wow, those trees look so real. Wow, these animals are so photorealistic.
Yeah.
And then you forget And unfortunately, we're at a point where technology is so good that we can take that stuff for granted. So once that wonder has worn off, it's like, well, now you have to tell me a story that is worth caring about and right. investing in.
Or yeah, especially if it's a retelling of some sort, then you
have right.
to, you have like you kind of have to make your version worthwhile. Like, what's different?
You have
about
to answer
this?
The question of why are we doing this beyond now? It's live action, which, by the way, no, it isn't. The kid is live action,
right?
It's 1/10 live action. The rest of it is still animated. Yeah. It's just animated by computers. And yet we end up calling this the live action Jungle Book because there's one human in it.
Well, going down to the malt shop.
Yes.
With Shere Khan. so it's okay. I mean, like, yeah, we're just making jokes about it, but it's good. It's totally fine.
It's fine.
I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. I rewatched it, but I saw it with my friend who has never seen it before.
Okay. All right.
And that is such a pleasure. That is such a great experience. Friends out there, movie friends out there, I'm sure you guys have all experienced this where it's just a movie that's really familiar to you, but then this person has never, ever seen it before, and you get to watch it through their eyes a little bit. And it makes that, like, then you're reminded of how great this movie was the first time you watched it. And it was just the best experience, you know, and she was reacting and all, oh my gosh, what, like, what's going on, you know, like, what's Indy doing now, like, what are the Nazis doing? And it was awesome. It was just the best experience. You know, she was like apologizing the whole way, like, oh, sorry to make you watch this again. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, this is the best. Like,
yeah, right, like, nobody ever complains right. about having to watch Raiders again.
Yeah, to stop gushing and just be like, isn't this great? Wait, isn't this great too?
I will say some of this is dependent on who you're showing it to, because in like 2006 there was a week-long, like, 25th anniversary re-release at the Music Box. Mm-hmm. And a group of us went, and our friend brought his then-girlfriend as a date, and she had never seen it.
Sure.
And that ended up ruining the experience for me because she was so listless and bored that at one point she got up and just like walked around in the lobby. She was like, this movie's not doing it for me. And that became such a distraction to me that it actually ruined the experience seeing the movie with somebody who had never seen it before, because I was like, how can you possibly be bored by, like, what do you need from a movie when you are just so bored by Raiders of the Lost Ark that you would literally rather wander around then watch this movie.
It's
so
it's a deal breaker.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
They did not stay together. Thank goodness.
That's wow. Okay. The last one I'll talk about is I saw this documentary on Netflix, I think, and it's called Meet the Patels. And I feel bad because I don't remember the main guy. So the main character, but this guy living out in LA, he's Indian, and his sister is filming this whole thing where his parents are really getting on his back about, you know, you got to get married and you're getting older. And it sort of just sort of explores all this, what marriage means in very specifically in Indian culture, but sort of like in a larger context of like maybe Asian culture as well, which I found interesting because I'm Asian, everybody. No, but it gets into everything. Like, it interviews his parents. It like talks about like this. It follows his like real life journey. He goes back to India and like the village that his parents grew up in and all this other sort of stuff. And like, you kind of get to feel like the pressure that he does of like, why do I have to? And he grew up in America, right? So he has a much more different idea of dating and courtship and marriage and all that stuff. And you kind of see him struggle through it. You see him go on dates, and it's like, well, this person's okay, but this is not whatever. So it's not just him sort of aimlessly doing this. What he decides to do is like, okay, my parents are on my back about this. I'm going to take this as seriously as I'm going to show them that I'm serious about it. I'm going to sort of demonstrate to them that I'm taking them seriously. And so he decides, I think he takes a year is the point of, and then he's like, I'm going to go accept every possible offer for a date. Right. So he's like on these websites and like the Indian parents are on like this network where they like exchange like information about their kids. He's like, I'm not going to say no to one of those. I'm just going to go through it. I'm going to tell them what I want. And so in the year, and it's all compressed inside of the documentary, he flies all over the country, like goes to LA, goes to Toronto, goes to Chicago, Boston, New York, whatever, all this stuff. And so he really gives it a real legitimate try for it. So just, you know, I think it's interesting just as sort of from a cultural point of view, and just, it's just interesting to see like what this guy kind of goes through, and he's just trying to find happiness, but at the same time, like appease this part of his culture that isn't necessarily the biggest part of his life, but he respects it so much. So it's called Meet the Patels because his parents are Patels. He's a Patel.
And that is on Netflix.
I think it's on Netflix.
I think you're right. The main guy's name is Ravi Patel?
I think so. And I think he works.
He's like, an actor.
Yeah, he's done some acting.
He was on Master of None, the Aziz Ansari Netflix show. Mm-hmm. And they have a very funny episode about competing for the same roles and being turned down because every production can only have one funny Indian.
Right. Or like they talk about, I remember Ravi, he talks about in his documentary, he talks about like he's having conversations with his friends hanging out. They're like, yeah, do you know how many times I've played a doctor?
Right.
Or like a computer technician?
Or a cab driver. And that was
it's funny.
I think that was kind of what they were saying on the Aziz Ansari show, which is a funny show and I recommend it to people. Meet the Patels. Yeah. All right. Right on. I remember that coming out kind of in limited release because it played at a theater near here and the cast was in attendance.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
My friend David Fowley did like a Q&A with them because they're from Illinois. I think he's from like Freeport. But I don't think I realized it was a documentary. I thought it was like a narrative feature.
So. No, it's super interesting because it's very sort of handheld. But
Right.
And I was kind of worried that it was going to be this like weird like home video confessional. But it's not actually. It's sort of there's some production value. There's like a narrative that connects everything. And I was surprisingly like really intrigued and interested the whole time, which is kind of what you want out of a documentary.
Cool, yeah. I saw a very good documentary that is currently in limited release and available on VOD. Called Wiener, and that is the,
what could this be about?
This is the documentary about Anthony Wiener, the New York politician who left office after it was revealed that he was sending dick pics. Basically, he accidentally tweeted all of his followers instead of direct messaging the dick pic. And he was kind of run out of office for that.
I love the word accidentally.
Whoops. So then a couple years go by and he decides he's going to run for mayor of New York and is doing very well from what I understand. And then it comes out that he had sent more sexual text messages like after leaving office the first time. He said, okay, I'm caught. I'm done. I'm not going to do that anymore. And then it came out that he had continued to do it. And obviously it hurt. Yeah, obviously it hurt his campaign. And of course it became just such a national story, not just because we love a sex scandal, particularly when it involves a politician.
Particularly when it involves a politician named Wiener.
Exactly. I mean, the jokes wrote themselves. He was sexting under the name Carlos Danger. I mean, there's all these stories that you're just like, well, this is too hilarious to ignore, I guess. And he is married, of course, to Huma Abedin, the Clinton advisor, who's a very, very well-known politician as well. Or I guess she's not a politician, but political figure as well. And so the documentary is very interesting. I don't know exactly what the context was under which the documentary was made. I think it was like, okay, we're going to follow him as he tries to resurface in his mayoral run. Again, not knowing that things would then implode yet again
into something more spectacular.
Right. And he's just a fascinating guy because there are scenes where he'll go on talk shows and he's kind of a volatile guy. So he'll go on talk shows and they start to press him on stuff. And then he gets real confrontational and argumentative. And you're like watching a public figure melt down in front of you. And you feel so, I mean, you don't get like the full behind the scenes of his relationship with Huma, but at one point they're on the phone with reporters. They're both on the call. The TV is essentially breaking the latest details and she can't even talk and she's looking at him and your heart breaks. It's a really interesting movie. I think it's totally worth checking out. It's called Wiener. You can't miss it. It's playing in limited release and it's on VOD. I saw it on VOD. So it's not a movie that needs to be seen in theaters.
unless you're interested in Humo's unbelievably horrible taste in men.
Sure. Apparently. Yes. Or unless you just want to say the sentence, one for Wiener, please. I also watched a movie on VOD called, I want to make sure I get the title right, How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town. And this is...
It's very specific. It sounds perfect for Junesploitation, by the way.
It is not at all a Junesploitation movie. This is a Canadian comedy, and it stars Jewel State from... Most people, I think, will know her from Firefly. Yeah. To me, I watched it because I'm a fan of hers from Stargate Atlantis. Catherine Isabel is also in it, who makes a lot of horror films and is great. And Jewel State plays this girl in high school who's trying to lose her virginity. It doesn't go well. She gets outed as sort of the town slut and disappears. Her town is very kind of uptight. It's this small little Canadian town. One of the things I appreciated about the movie actually is that it's Canada playing Canada. It's not Canada trying to play New York or whatever. She gets run out of town. She becomes a very successful columnist, like writing about sex. And then her mother passes away. She comes back to town and encounters all the people who ran her out of town. And then they start trying to plan an orgy to prove that they are not sort of the uptight, puritanical town she portrayed them to be in her column.
It's an orgy for good.
It's a ridiculous premise.
For charity.
And kind of a terrible premise. And I think the movie never really recovers from, like, I don't know. I feel like there's 15 or 20 steps between, like, hey, you said some bad stuff about us, and let's plan an orgy.
Sure. I haven't found that to be true in my experience. But
no. It's so it's ridiculous. I mean, eventually, it's certainly more of kind of a character-based thing, because eventually everyone has their own motivations for wanting to participate. And it's difficult, you'll find. The screenwriters had some challenges trying to come up with different reasons for why everyone would want to participate in an orgy. It's not just like, I want to have sex with a lot of people in the same room.
Wait, there's different reasons?
Exactly. Oh. They had to kind of manufacture some differing reasons why they'd want to have an orgy. And it's certainly a movie that, like, finds sex to be way funnier than it is. Jewel State is, you know, very charming. It's if you watched it on cable accidentally, you'd be fine. You know, if it showed up on Netflix and you had wiped out the rest of your queue, you're a big Jewel State fan, you're a big fan of Canadian orgies.
Sure.
There are reasons why it's an okay 90 minutes, but I don't think anybody needs to really seek it out. And there was an American movie, came out a couple of years ago, about an orgy, and I can't remember the name of it. Jason Sudeikis and Tyler Labine Lake Bell. There were a bunch of people in it. I'm going to look it up right now while we're talking about it, because it had a lot of the same dumb problems that this movie had.
Like, rejected by the town, and now I'm going to do this.
This was like, we're getting old, we need to do something crazy
to prove.
Exactly. A good old-fashioned orgy is what that one was called.
Because there's nothing that says that proves your youth like an orgy.
It's really dumb. I mean, it just,
that's why the Romans died out of it.
I saw it on the VOD thing, and honestly, I watched it because Jewel State was in it. But I was like, well, that's a script. You know, How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town is like a script that's definitely going to be read and probably bought. You know, the title is so, it grabs you so much. And I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't rent pretty well on VOD. But it's slight and not,
it's like a one act play.
Yeah. And if you're like into it for like the sex stuff, don't be. There are other ways to get that fixed.
We're not going to tell you those ways.
Yeah, it's not the bone fest you're hoping for.
you're not going to put it on your boner jam. No, 2016.
It will not be on this year's boner jams.
Okay.
Should we talk about X-Men Apocalypse?
Let's do it.
All right. So we're going to talk spoiler free about X-Men Apocalypse for a few minutes, and then we'll get into spoilers. I will default to you. Maybe give us a little background on your history with the X-Men movie franchise.
Oh, geez, okay.
Like how you felt about kind of the series as a whole.
Sure.
and then give me an introduction on your feelings about X-Men Apocalypse.
I was going to save some of the stuff for the spoiler part, just because I feel like when I was watching it, I was thinking a lot about my relationship with like this particular storyline and this group of characters.
Sure.
But, you know, we can still talk about it now. So I think growing up in terms of like comic books, when I sort of like an off and on again sort of comic book collector. I was more of a comic book reader rather than a comic book collector. And so, you know, I think X-Men was definitely my favorite set of characters, for sure growing up. And then, you know, when the movies came out, you know, the Bryan Singer, the first Bryan Singer ones, those were great. And I enjoyed them and really liked all of them. I actually like went back. I tried to watch all of them before coming today to record with you, but, I wasn't successful in like watching all of them, but I did watch like bits and pieces just to remember some stuff. Cause I think because as a franchise, the whole thing is kind of like shifted around in terms of time. So
yeah.
I remember my reaction in the theater when I was watching it with my buddy that I was with. We were both like, okay, what year is this? Mm-hmm. Like, what year is this going to be? We have no idea. And so, you know, generally, overall, like, pretty positive. Even, like, the Brett Ratner one, even the X3 was, I find it's not great, but at the same time, it's, like, really rewatchable. And same sort of thing where, like, if it's on cable and it just happens to be on television, it's like, ah, we're going to watch this. I got some laundry to fold. Let's do this. So in terms of my expectations coming in, it wasn't super high because it just, you know, it sort of hits all the beats of everything. It just feels like it goes over ground that you've gone over before, even with, like, the same characters maybe a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, like you've seen the trailer, like, oh, there's younger Jean Grey.
Right.
Okay, well, it's like, didn't we go there already? Which is fine. But then watching it so my expectations were low. But at the same time, like, I'm still, like, excited to watch an X-Men movie because I like the X-Men. And so watching it, my overall impression was, like, it was okay. It was fine. It was, I think there's such a comparison to, I think my immediate comparison was to, like, all the Avengers movies that have been coming out. And we can get into that later, I guess. But it's one thing I liked about it was that it has such a different voice than all the other Marvel stuff.
Okay.
In terms of, like, the Captain America movies.
Right,
or, like,
right.
The Iron Man. It's got a different voice. And I sort of really like that. I know Marvel is trying to bring everything under its umbrella corporation, you know, whatever. But at the same time, and I know Bryan Singer has not always the best filmmaker for whatever, but I think I like that at least he got to make his stamp on this, that he has his own, like, personal whatever. And that the tone of the X-Men movies are, like, definitively much more different than, like, anything else.
Yeah.
So I liked it. So overall, like, I kind of liked it. I think there were things to like. I just kind of felt like, I guess my primary thing that I didn't like about it was that it just sort of, like, we've seen this stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean, like, the inventiveness of the stunts or whatever, but it's just, like, I feel like we've hit the same beats with the same characters from in other movies somehow. But yeah, I liked it okay. I was okay with it. What about you?
Okay. My mutant power is going to be complaining about this movie.
Yeah!
I did not like this movie.
Oh, I'm excited.
Almost at all. I've been trying really hard to think of, like, well, what are some things that I did like,
mm-hmm.
And I'm coming up real short. So, and this is amazing because I am such a fan of the X-Men comic book and always have been. The first comic book I ever bought was an X-Men comic, and I immediately fell in love with them, and that was one that I've collected my whole life. I have been a fan to one degree or another of every one of the movies, like you, even X-Men The Last Stand is not great, but I also, like you, find it super rewatchable. Yeah. I don't hate it. When the original X-Men came out, obviously that was a very important movie to a lot of us because it was really the first kind of comic book movie of a certain generation. Obviously, they had done Batman for several years. Blade had come out like 2 years before. Sure. There were a few in the 90s, but like, this was one from a very well-known comic book that my whole life I had said, like, well, they'll never do it because it would just cost too much. And it was taking itself fairly seriously. It was treating the material seriously. And it told you that right off the bat because it has that great opening with young Magneto in Auschwitz. And it's an incredible sequence, so much so that Bryan Singer just keeps showing it again and again. But it's a great opening. The first half hour of the original X-Men I still think is really terrific. I was so excited to see it that I like left a vacation early so that I could get home for the matinee because I was like, how am I not going to see X-Men the day it opens? X2 I was so excited for that like I was losing sleep. I think I saw it twice the day it opened.
That one's really good, man.
I haven't watched it in a long time, but I remember really liking it. Obviously, it leaves and it ends in such an amazing place, and that's I've said before on this podcast that I think the downfall of X-Men: The Last Stand is that it blows the promise of X2's ending. Right, yeah. X2 ends by saying it kind of gives you the Wrath of Khan ending, and then says, "And now we're going to do Dark Phoenix." And then X3 just blows that, and
right?
It, for a lot of different reasons. Very troubled production and just a mess overall. X-Men First Class, I think, is fun.
Yeah.
Not perfect, but fun.
Different voice.
Smart, I think, to kind of go back and do kind of a prequel. We get to see other actors playing some of these characters. I really like James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender as those two characters.
They're so, so good. Yeah.
Days of Future Past, I still think, might be my favorite X-Men movie. Because I think it combines so much of what I like about some of the Bryan Singer ones with kind of the reboot that Matthew Vaughn had done. We get the best of both worlds. I thought they were very clever in the way they combined those two continuities.
Yeah.
It ends, you know, I guess spoilers for Days of Future Past. It ends by essentially resetting the timeline and says, okay, yeah, we know that Last Stand kind of blew it.
We're going to pretend that that one didn't happen.
So we ignore it, right. And so Jean Grey is alive again, and Cyclops is alive again, and
Professor X is still around.
Professor X is still around. Like, so great, okay. And then that leads to Apocalypse. And for whatever reason, some of it was the marketing, some of it, I don't know. I have to assume it's all the marketing. I was not looking forward to this movie. It felt...
Yeah, we kept talking about that.
It felt like an obligation instead of like, I'm so excited to go see the new X-Men movie. I was like, I guess I gotta go see this new X-Men movie. And the movie that I saw was the movie that I was dreading from the marketing, which is kind of dour, which is generic in almost every single way, which is completely dramatically flat, which... again, is smart in the way that it's able to recast some of the characters because now we're in the 80s. We're 10 years after the 70s events of Days of Future Past. So now we're in the 80s, so we can have a young Jean Grey and a young Scott Summers. I don't want to blame the new cast, but I don't think those characters... I don't think they figured out what to do with the characters. And like you said, we get some of Jean Grey, like Scott Summers, we get almost nothing. Like, we get the origin of his powers.
No one knows what to do with Scott. No one knows what to do with
Scott. No one ever does. Even in the comic book. We get sort of the origin of his powers, which is like he doesn't have powers and then he does. Well, okay, who cares? Jean Grey, we cover some of the same territory as the original Bryan Singer X-Men. I feel like with Sophie Turner, they were like, well, she has red hair.
Right. Who's the most famous redhead?
Right. I mean, that's
ta-da.
About as far as they thought it. And I guess she's in the age range as well because they were going for someone younger. You know, you had said it kind of perfectly that like all of these beats have really been covered already.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of my biggest problems with the movie is that there aren't any real character arcs, and what few there are have 100% been done to death already. The only real reason for this movie to exist, the only thing that is sort of different, is instead of this being another movie about humans versus or mutants versus mankind, which is essentially what every X-Men movie has been about.
Yeah.
To date, this one is about an external threat, you know, a big bad, yeah, for lack of a better word. And it's Oscar Isaac playing Apocalypse. Now, I did not, I think I lapsed in reading comics in the 90s when this storyline was published.
Sure.
So I was not really familiar with the Age of Apocalypse storyline.
Sure. I don't necessarily think I was either. I've kind of like since then gone back and sort of read up a little bit. And I think my main, I don't know, I think Oscar Isaac is fine because Oscar Isaac is a good actor. But I just didn't know if Apocalypse is a great choice for a movie villain. I kind of feel like he's just kind of like too big. He's too like,
well, certainly not physically.
Right. But
because Oscar Isaac is shorter than every other character,
right,
in this movie.
But that's a little bit problematic because Apocalypse is supposed to be bigger than everyone.
Correct.
And he is sort of like this gigantic, I don't know, this sort of mutant who can do everything.
Right.
And so it's like, well, it's really weird that it's a guy who's like 5'8".
He has completely undefined powers.
Right.
So we don't know. He's a huge problem with this movie.
Right. I feel like he's a better, like, TV. Like, if you made, like, X-Men, like, the TV show,
right,
then he'd be a lot better because he could be this recurring, like,
sure,
he fuels conspiracy and he sows seeds of discord everywhere.
Because what, I mean, we'll talk about it in spoilers, but, like, what does he actually do in this movie? Nothing. He, like, threatens to destroy the world.
Right.
And I won't say any more before we get into spoilers. He essentially does one thing. Well, okay. We'll talk about it. We'll get into spoilers in just a minute.
Right.
I can't really think of anything in this movie that worked for me. I thought it was paced really poorly. It's a 2.5-hour movie.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really dull. I just thought it was all flat. I think it's a badly made movie. I think there's just too much garbage CG that just, you feel nothing. It's just a lot of like, there's debris flying in the air, right, and explosions and,
sure,
and you don't connect to any of it. You know, I had talked about on the Captain America Civil War podcast how it was interesting that like we get to the end of the Avengers and they're all fighting as a team and using their powers kind of in tandem.
Mm-hmm.
And that now that's the ground floor. That's the baseline. And now every, yeah, movie has to build on that. And one of the things that should have been interesting about Apocalypse is we've built up to the point where now these movies finally have the budgets and the studio support where they can be big in the way that reading the comic books were, you know, because,
sure,
in a comic book you can do anything. And so in a lot of ways, this feels the most like a comic book in terms of its scale and in terms of like everyone has powers, everyone's using their powers.
Right.
But I don't think they do it in a way that's ever interesting. And so I was thinking about one of the reasons that I always kind of was an apologist for The Last Stand was because I felt like that final battle scene finally felt like,
sure,
X-Men cutting loose and feeling like a big fight, mutants versus mutants. They're literally throwing cars in the air and then setting them on fire and hurling,
right,
them at each,
yeah,
other, you know. And I was like, okay, cool. And I still feel like that sequence had way more weight, had more inventiveness than anything we see,
yeah,
in Apocalypse. So while that created the new baseline, I don't feel like Apocalypse like took the ball and ran with it at all. I never felt anything in this movie, and I found that to be so frustrating because, again, I like the X-Men. I like the characters. I don't think any of the characters had arcs. I don't think they figured out whose story are they telling.
Right. Who are they following?
At all.
Are they following Apocalypse? Which would have been fine. Are they following Jean Grey? Are they following...
Right.
Cyclops?
And they do a little bit of everybody, but not enough at all because, again, enough. Days of Future Past juggled a ton of stuff, too. They're literally juggling timelines and a crazy dystopian future and a past, but like you had Mystique had a very clear arc.
Yeah.
Magneto had a very clear arc. And honestly, I think more than anything, Charles Xavier had a very clear,
yeah,
arc. And so there was something to hook into. What are they trying to do in Apocalypse? Like whose story is this?
Right.
It's
sort of a placeholder because it's sort of picking up pieces from previous movies and not like directly the one right before, but like pieces of other ones. And so it's just sort of like this one ends up sort of being like a placeholder in terms of like, well, we had this left over, so let's do that. Like, this left over, let's do that.
So Days of Future Past resets the timeline, so they could literally do anything now.
Sure.
And instead, it's like everything's the same.
Right.
Every character still behaves in the same way. You know, they created a world in which Mystique should be seen as a hero to everyone, where mutants should be more widely accepted because she did a courageous thing, like on national television. And instead, this movie, because it's unable to think of a new idea, just resets and says, like, no, humans still hate us. Well, why? You don't. You know what I mean? There's no explanation for it. It's like just so they can get back to doing the same story that they've done five times already, which is like humans hate us and fear us. Instead of kind of forging new territory with the story that they previously told, they're just like, we'll go back and just do X-Men the way we've always done it. And again, I like that about the X-Men, that it has always been this kind of metaphor for tolerance. And you can read it as a gay rights allegory. You can read it as a Jewish allegory. You can read it as a minority allegory, however you want. It works in any of those ways. But this movie doesn't work as allegory and hasn't figured out anything new to say.
Yeah.
Let's you want to get into spoilers?
Let's do it, man.
Okay.
I think
we will get into spoilers right after this break. Hey, Marcon.
Hey, what's up, Patrick?
We're talking about a big old comic book blockbuster kind of movie on the podcast this week. Did you have any kind of big blockbustery movies that you liked to watch as a kid?
Oh, man. I remember, especially during high school, like Terminator 2.
Terminator
2 was a huge blockbuster. Actually, I think that's the movie I've seen the most in theaters, because I think I went to go see it like 4 or 5 times. I have to say 4 or 5 because for one of them, I had an extra large Sprite, and so I went to go pee like 13 times during the movie, pissing off the entire completely crowded theater of people. I'm like, excuse me, pardon me. So that one kind of doesn't count. So 4 times definitively, 5 times.
All right. Were there movies that you used to watch at sleepovers as a kid?
Oh, my gosh. All the time. I think the first X-Men we sort of had as a sleepover.
You were far too old to be having sleepovers at that point.
Look, we just called them sleepovers because our parents weren't around. So that's what we call a sleepover.
Did you have any like 80s action movies, fantasy movies, those kinds of movies that you grew up watching?
We did Neverending Story.
Yes.
We did Princess Bride, of course.
Yes.
We did Willow, all that other kind of stuff. So yeah, that was fun.
These are the exact kinds of movies that they talk about, that Dion and Jay Blake talk about all the time over at Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. If you've been listening to F This Movie all month, you've been hearing me talk about Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers and what a fun podcast it is, and that these are the kinds of movies that they are talking about. I don't know for sure if they have a Terminator 2 episode. I know they have a Neverending Story episode that they just recently did.
Hey, we'll go check it out.
But yeah, these kinds of... movies that we grew up loving, movies that were kind of staples on cable TV. You know, they do an episode on Labyrinth, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. They have an episode on Invasion USA, one of my favorite Chuck Norris movies that really we should all watch every 4th of July just to appreciate American fascism. and it was fun last week when we were talking about Junesploitation. People were publishing some of the things that they were going to be watching, and the guys from Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers were jumping in on the comments like, hey, just so you know, we have an episode on Halloween 2. And then somebody else, a listener who had checked out that episode, was like, yeah, I listened to that one. That was really great. I love how you pointed out the bananas car exploding, which is my favorite moment in that entire movie. But yeah, Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers is a podcast a lot like this one, if you're a fan of F This Movie and the way that they talk about movies and the kinds of movies that they talk about. You know, they're talking about movies that they have real affection for. It's not just like, well, let's take this old movie and analyze it to death and pick it apart. They're talking about the movies that they have affection for, but it's not just through the lens of nostalgia. You know, they're able to discuss these movies in a way that's both funny and smart. Which I hope to do on F This Movie. I think really you bring the smart, and I
SMRT
bring no funny. Yeah. But you should check them out. They have a podcast on one of my favorite horror movies of all time, the Chuck Russell remake of The Blob.
Blub, blub, blub.
And I don't know if any of you F This Movie listeners have gone yet to their website, SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. I keep telling you to do this. Go into their comments section. Find their episode on The Blob. Listen to it. And then please, just in the comments, write blub, blub, blub.
Also, every Halloween, you should just email Patrick through F This Movie's Gmail account and just put blub. Because that's what I do. I text him just out of the blue sometimes. In the middle of July, I'm like, blub.
It's true. They have episodes on The Warriors and The Last Starfighter and Batman 1989. Like, literally every movie you grew up loving.
Last Starfighter.
Right?
Last
Starfighter. So please check them out. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. You can find them in the iTunes store. And if you're listening to them and you're a fan, please leave them a good review in the iTunes store. Obviously, that always helps every show. They're at SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. It's a great show. Check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. Okay, so now we're in spoilers.
Let's spoil it away.
For X-Men Apocalypse.
So there's nothing at all that you like about it?
I'm
not
trying.
Not one thing.
I'm trying so hard.
Okay, I'm going to offer some things. You ready?
Yeah.
What did you think of how Psylocke looked? Just the look of the character.
That's fine. That's fucking cosplay.
Like, all right, nice.
She did good Psylocke cosplay.
Sure.
That's not a character. That's not a performance. Actually,
sure.
I think a lot of times when they cut to her, she was doing this, like, wide-eyed, startled thing that I thought was unintentionally funny. I think it's such a poorly made movie and because so much of the dialogue, so much of the exposition takes place, and there's a lot of exposition in
yes,
this movie,
there is.
Takes place via, like, ADR, off-camera dialogue where they're cutting around, like, characters actually saying lines and actually giving a performance. Like, it's
sure.
really kind of stitched together in a bad way. I don't think any of the action sequences are particularly impressive.
They're very, like, one-on-one kind of.
And
like,
just
this
a lot of, like, CGI and sure. wire work and green screen, and I don't feel anything. I have no connection to any of it. Not to compare it to, you know, Civil War, some of the action in Civil War, I wasn't as in love with. Shaking
sure.
the camera or cutting away too many times, you know. But again, there's inventiveness to how these characters use their powers kind of in correspondence with one another. There really isn't an X-Men Apocalypse for as much as, like, we're a team. It's like everybody's kind of on their own.
Sure. I think also just during the battles in this movie, it seems like they're...
By the way, there's, like... one battle.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Like, whenever they're using their powers, you feel like you don't have any... and look, I don't want to complain and just be like, look, I need an instruction manual to know exactly what Apocalypse is capable of doing and not capable of. Like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. But there's ways that you can define that in a story, or you can define that on screen. And then especially because this is the latest movie out of a series of movies, like, we've seen Magneto do things. We've
right.
seen... you know, whatever, Scott Summers, like, blasting stuff.
Right, right.
But it strangely felt like in a lot of this movie, that those powers were, like, weirdly undefined or just seemed, like, less than they actually were. Like, Storm in this movie seems, like, much less powerful than Storm in the
yes.
in, like, other movies.
And someone would say, oh, because she's a young Storm, because this was always the defense of Man of Steel. Well, he's a young Superman, and that's why there are thousands of casualties.
Sure.
They all, unfortunately, just have the same power, which is, like, they hold out their hands,
and then
CGI debris flies around.
Right.
I mean, they try to introduce this idea that, like, now Magneto can move the metal in the ground, like,
sure.
and move the earth. I don't think they really do much with that.
Right. Except it just flies in the air.
Right.
And, like, swirls up like a tornado.
Again, for as badly handled as the scene ends up being, I still prefer the scene in The Last Stand where he, like, moves the entire Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
It's a problematic scene because it switches from day to night, and you don't really know why they have to do it. They're really just, like, making an entrance.
Yeah,
it's not really necessary. Like, this will impress people.
Yeah.
But it's an idea that they're like, well, this might be cool. There's nothing like that. It is a problem that Apocalypse has completely undefined powers.
Right.
It is a problem. Also, what is the threat that he poses? He keeps saying, I'm going to destroy this world. And we don't understand why. He just keeps saying, like, I'm going to cleanse the world and make a better one.
Sure.
I don't know how he plans to make a better one. There's not going to be any people
if
left on
it. If you've killed everyone. Right.
Right. It's going to be him and four other mutants. And one of them is Psylocke, and she's boring. So I don't understand that plan. But, like, what's the one – up until the last battle, what's the one thing he does in this movie besides make promises?
He sort of time travels and, okay, like, meets – it's like he's interviewing people for – would you like to join this team?
He does. He designs their costumes, which, right, more than one person has pointed out as being hilarious. They talked about it on Slash Film. And one of our somebody wrote to me on Twitter about it that, like, in the scene where Magneto steps away to, like, take a call, basically, from, yeah, Charles Xavier, Apocalypse is in the background redesigning their costumes, which, by the way, he turns them all into Joel Schumacher characters. Like, he makes them all look like Batman Forever. He gives them such gaudy – everything is so gaudy. The makeup on Apocalypse is just cheap and gaudy. He looks like
– look, the Egyptians – were not known for a subtle taste.
When they first introduced his appearance,
they like to get it out there.
People immediately started posting comparisons to, like, the villain on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Exactly.
And it is that bad. It's 100% that bad. He's not playing a character. Oscar Isaac is totally wasted. We're in spoilers, so I can say this. Near the end of the movie, they're in, like, Charles Xavier's mind, and he and Apocalypse are, like, fighting psychically. And Apocalypse makes himself grow, right?
Sure.
And eventually he gets to cartoonishly large proportions. But at one point he's like twice his normal size. And I was like, if you have the effect to do that,
why don't you do that in the movie?
Why didn't you do that for this entire movie? Because at least then he would look intimidating.
Right.
Because instead he's literally shorter than everyone he's standing next to.
Right. And all, yeah, exactly.
So, but what is the one threat that he poses to the world? Can you remember? What's the one big action that he takes? I'll tell you.
Go.
He disarms all of the nuclear weapons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. He's the biggest threat. He disarms all of the nuclear weapons. That's his move. That's the one thing that he does as a threat until the final battle.
And so...
So what goddamn threat does he pose?
Now we need to recap this. Okay, so since he gets rid of all the nuclear weapons, does that mean that the humans can't defend themselves against mutants? Is that what it is?
I don't even think that's why he's doing it.
Because I think from what I remember in the movie, he said something about it, like, levels the playing field, and they can't, no more spears, no more weapons.
Right,
no,
okay,
more,
right.
Which I'm like, okay, that's fine, but so does that pave the way for you, Apocalypse, to, like, wipe everybody out? Like, I don't understand.
I don't either.
Yeah. Again, I think this is a thing where, if you have, like, a multi-episode kind of thing, I feel like Apocalypse works as a better villain. Because he's more, I don't know, it seems like he's more of, like, a long, and they set this up in the movie itself, where, like, he's sort of this guy with a long view. He's got, like, a plan, right? He's not a person who just comes out and just kills everybody, like, wantonly.
Right.
He's sort of like a planner, like a conspiracy.
He's definitely a costume designer.
Right. Look, everyone needs an avocation. He's passionate about passion for fashion. It seems to undercut his authority or undercut, like, his power if you just, like, this world threat that you're saying that he is, and you just, like, cut him out, like, in, like, one movie. I just think it would work a lot better if, again, I'm not encouraging people to do this, but, like, I think it might have worked better if, like, he was sort of this, like, in the comics, right? But it's this shadow over, like, many storylines, over many issues, that sort
right.
of thing. And so I just think it's really hard to sort of, like, compact a character whose effect is so big into, like, something so small. Like the, and so they only can do the small
literally
strokes.
Small.
Yeah, right.
Literally tiny.
Right. They can only do the small strokes. Like, oh, he changes this guy's look and
he gives Storm white hair. Like, she exists so that we can get the origin of her white mohawk.
Right.
Who cares?
Right. Especially when Storm is super not interesting. I think another... What do you think of the... No, I don't know. I'm not going to present it as a problem because I don't know if it's a problem.
I will.
Okay.
It's my mutant power.
Yeah. My mutant power is having a gigantic skull. it's not really a useful mutation. It stretches all my shirts, guys. I think this movie suffers a little bit just from Jennifer Lawrence's popularity. And so I think... they feel really forced to, like, put her to the forefront. I watched a little bit of X-Men First Class last night, especially that fantastic dance party scene in the middle of the movie.
Yes.
And I totally, my memory for time and who's popular one is always muddled. But, like, I think that was sort of, like, the beginning of, like, the Jennifer Lawrence ascension. And
yes.
She was still, like, not as popular as she is now. So it's still popular, but not, like, the biggest thing. And I think now she's just like full blown. She's like in every movie, that sort of thing. And correct. So I think the movie itself, and you know, you understand why they do this, feels the pressure to push her to the forefront, which is weird because like Mystique in the source material is not as big of a character as she is in this movie.
Nope.
And so it's, but they could, like, to your point earlier, like they could make that work because they didn't give her this like essential role where she like did something really brave on national television and walked away, and that's fine. But they don't use any of that momentum for anything. And so since they don't use that momentum in this movie, when she's pushed to the forefront, it just seems like, well, this is not the most, this is not the person that I would want to spend the most time with in this movie, kind of thing.
Right. It's a problem for a lot of reasons. One, they try to set her up as a hero to some of the mutants, particularly Storm, who I think also, unfortunately, the actress's name is Alexandra Shipp, I think gives just as bad a performance as Halle Berry ever did.
Sure.
So again, we're like, yay, perfect. New Storm. Oh, cool. They're doing the Mohawk this time. Oh, wait, nope. She still sucks. Okay, got it. That's the one, that's like the one thing that pays off is that Mystique is her hero, and so at the end of the movie she decides to pitch in and defeat Apocalypse because he's trying to kill Mystique,
sure.
who is her hero.
Right.
It's not great storytelling, but okay. It's a problem because, yeah, she's not the character that she is in the comic. Fine, you're going to go a different way. Fine. Her experiences in Days of Future Past do not inform who she is now. Again, they just reset her so that she's going sure. around gathering mutants, essentially, because everyone still fears us. Well, you've already told that story six times. They go out of their way to make sure that she can just appear as Jennifer Lawrence and not in the blue makeup.
Right.
They give her too big a part, and Jennifer Lawrence is, to me, openly miserable in this movie. She is completely
yeah,
bored,
so bored,
completely yeah. unengaged, disconnected from the material, just could not give a shit openly. And it's interesting because that puts her performance at roughly the same level as most of the other cast, who's really trying sure. and yet can only be as good as bored Jennifer Lawrence on their best day. McAvoy comes off well because yeah. he always does. Fassbender comes off okay because yeah. he always does. We
but
need to talk about Magneto in a second here.
Sort of wasted. Yeah.
100% wasted. Rose Byrne is trying.
Right.
And some of her scenes are like kind of engaging because, although it's very weird, like her first scenes with Charles Xavier, it turns into this weird screwball romantic comedy where all of a sudden Charles Xavier is Hugh Grant and just stammering and making mistakes. And then I will say at the end of the movie, and the movie does not earn this one bit, but when Xavier like gives her her memories back of what happened in First Class.
Yeah.
I thought it was an effective moment, but the reason I thought it was an effective moment was purely because they were flashing back to clips from First Class.
Right, 'cause that movie works.
Exactly. So it was just banking on that currency, and I was like, oh yeah, I liked their dynamic and when they kissed, and like that was all cool. I remember that. I liked that, and so
I'm going to go home and watch that after I'm done watching this.
It's like they just broke in with 10 minutes of Jaws, and those were the best 10 minutes. For like, hey, cool. Something I like. The only other thing that I can really think of that I like thought was sort of cool, again, is something that's already been done before, which is, and it's not Quicksilver, so don't say Quicksilver.
Shoot.
Because that is a fucking shameless attempt to like recapture the thing that everyone liked from the last movie. He's trying.
Listen.
Like, and he's fine. They clearly have gone a different way with that character, because again, that's not the character from the comics. That's
sure.
fine. They've kind of rethought him, and he's kind of entertaining, and
sure.
he says a couple things that make
sure.
me laugh. Yeah, he's like trying to create a character, so good for you, Evan Peters. It's at the end of the movie when Jean Grey is doing kind of a slow motion walk out to like a balcony
sure.
and then continues
Keeps walking, right.
Even though there's no ground underneath her, and then she, you know, finally cuts loose because Charles Xavier tells her to and releases, you know, essentially the phoenix
right.
power or whatever. And so there's fire behind her in the shape of a phoenix. And you're like, ooh, cool. Okay. But again, all
you've done that before.
Exactly. We've it just conjures up like, right. Oh, but you burned me on this shit once before.
Right. You actually, in your own, in this movie, you made fun of that movie where the phoenix comes out.
Right. Well, even the shape of the phoenix was like the thing that we liked about X2 because it shows up in the water and it's like, ooh, they're going to do phoenix. And so I got a little bit of that giddiness back and then immediately like splashed cold water on my face and was like, wait a second. No, fuck you. because you did this and you screwed it up. And Bryan Singer isn't the one who made Last Stand, I understand. But, like, it's hard to get excited when they're just trying to do something over that they already did. And they don't need to do Dark Phoenix again.
Yeah.
They don't need to.
Well, especially when it's, I think in, I don't want to put my comic book glasses on, but.
Please do.
I'm going to put my comic book underoos on, guys. And in the comic storyline, what's interesting about it is that there's this weird like doubling, you know, in the movies they just show her like having headaches,
yeah, right,
kind
right,
of thing,
right.
And that's like not for a visual media, that's not visually compelling.
Bryan Singer did something that wasn't visually compelling. I can't believe it.
Wait, do you not like, do you get it, guys? There's like X motifs everywhere. Do you see it? Do you get it? Oh my god, look, because it's the X-Men, duh. All right, I thought there were pluses. Okay. But like in the comic, the Dark Phoenix thing starts as like there's like a doubling and there's like a fake identity and a real identity, like not within the same person. Like literally there's like a fake Jean Grey, right? It's like Madeline Pryor, right?
Yeah.
The character. And so I just found that much. And I understand that maybe you don't want to do that. You don't want to like cast like two people for the same role or, you know, whatever, what have you. But just it's just not compelling to see this. Like just she's just like holding her head all the time and like, ow, it hurts. And. I don't know if that dark, I don't know if we've seen like a darker side of a, like when they did the Spider-Man, you know, they did Venom when he did the black costume.
Right.
Like, they didn't handle that really well either.
Nope.
I don't know if we've ever handled like that sort of thing. Great.
Just dark Superman in Superman 3 when he doesn't shave.
Or
they fight in a trash dump.
Now that I think about it, I think the best version of like a character who, but like turning sort of toward the darkness, is like Wolverine. But it's different because Wolverine is already a character who like sort of struggles with trying to be like a good guy in the first place. He's got all these demons that sort of haunt him. But the way that it works when it does work with Wolverine is because you kind of get to see inside of his head and you get to see how broken he is.
Right.
And so you see that because like Wolverine has his own movies. I think if you're going to do a Dark Phoenix movie, which it looks like that's the direction this is going, then you have to tell the movie from the point of view of Jean Grey, which is fine, I guess. But they've done like zero work to sort of set that up in this movie, right? That Jean Grey, like we don't follow her. She's just a thing that we see. We're like outside of everything. We're not following any, like to your point earlier, we're not like following someone's point of view throughout the whole movie. We're just outside of everything.
And I don't know if they're going to do Dark Phoenix next. I mean, they seem to sort of set that up, but then the post-credits...
Yeah, the stinger.
Stinger teases Mr. Sinister.
Yes.
Which I'm not super interested in.
Oh, I'm so bored.
And on Slash... Because he's another one of just, like, ill-defined power. Just like, I have power.
I time travel, and I'm a scientist, and I mess with people's genes. Although, like, since he's part of the Dark Phoenix thing, like, that might work, because he's the one that... He's sort of integral to that plot. But, yeah, I wasn't excited about that either.
But I know, like, Jeff Cannata on Slash Film was theorizing that they're also trying to set up X-23, which is the female Wolverine clone.
Yes.
Because Hugh Jackman is out, you know, supposedly after this next solo Wolverine movie. So that maybe Mr. Sinister is going to be responsible for creating X-23, because you can't do an X-Men movie without Wolverine, right? So let's talk about Wolverine, who, now that we're in spoilers, has a sequence in this movie.
Oh.
What'd you think of that?
Can you remind me what the sequence is again? Sorry. Like, only because like I've been watching like so eight X-Men movies.
Stryker kidnaps arbitrarily a few of the X-Men and Moira McTaggart.
Sure.
Completely arbitrarily, so that a few of the other X-Men, Nightcrawler, Jean Grey, and Cyclops can go rescue them.
Sure.
So that we can get to a scene where Wolverine breaks out and rescues them and then runs off into the woods. So this whole sequence, which is essentially the only real action set piece in the middle of the film. I mean, there's a little bit of action at the beginning. There's the action sequence at the end. This is only the only real one in the middle of the film.
Yeah.
Wolverine straight up just murders tons of people. What do you think of that scene?
I think I was talking about it after the movie, and my buddy and I agree that we didn't need that sequence at all. That sequence could have just been cut out of the movie, and they could, the narrative would have just gone on straight through.
Like, it's just to get a Wolverine cameo in the movie.
Just so he can break the record for playing the same character in a movie, whatever. I think
Because somebody at Fox thinks that, like, well, we have to have Wolverine. Because
we haven't seen him break out of that goddamn laboratory.
Well, first of all, it doesn't
already.
Even make sense because at the end of Days of Future Past, we're told that Stryker has him, except it's not Stryker, it's Mystique.
Right.
So at some point, the real Stryker still got him. I mean, it's just, it ignores the things that it sets up just so that we can get to this sequence, which, again, to me is completely uninteresting. Completely uninteresting.
I think the only narrative purpose, and not that this is a great reason that it serves, is just so you get, like, Jean and Wolverine connecting.
Yeah,
or
except
whatever.
She's a child.
Right.
So, like, even that felt weird, where they're just super staring weird at each other, and you're like, oh, so they're in love? Because
already?
She is a teenager.
Sure.
And he is an old man.
Right. You are a raving lunatic, is what you are. No, it's just, gosh, I was going to say something else about, and just, I'm tired of William Stryker, by the way.
I can't imagine why.
I'm super just, like, why does he keep, this is one of my, like, the thing of going over the same ground again. Like, we're going to go back to Phoenix, even though we already sort of covered Phoenix, which is fine. That we're going to go back to this William Stryker. He keeps showing up.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Like, yeah.
And Stryker's not super interesting.
I was fine with him in X2. I thought that was interesting because, again, it gave him an arc, and he had the son who was a mutant, and his whole thing was like, I don't want any more mutants. Okay, great.
Right.
But then we get him in X-Men Origins Wolverine, and then we get him again in First Class.
Yeah.
And now again in this movie.
It's boring.
It's boring, and it's the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I don't need to see, like, oh, he became this person.
And he wants Wolverine, Weapon X.
That's
like,
fine. Nobody cares.
Stop it. Speaking of doing the same thing over and over again.
Yes.
Did you know that Magneto, Eric Lenscher, also has good in him? Because if you didn't.
I've seen it.
This movie, again, has zero interest in kind of finding any new arc for Magneto. I mean, it sort of sets him up as like, I'm in hiding. I have established a family. I have a wife and daughter. Of course we have to kill them.
Right.
How else do we give a male character agency than murdering the female members of his family? So that was garbage. And then we get the 20th conversation between him and Charles Xavier where he's like, you're not only evil, you have good in you too. And
it's like they're both like
in case you didn't get it, the movie literally flashes back to all the other times they've had that conversation, nakedly admitting, like, yes, we are repeating the same thing we've done 20 times
it's
already.
Like they're both manic depressives. And the only, I don't know, whatever. And what's nice, and again, what's great about Days of Future Past is that you see, like, future Charles and future Magneto, and clearly they've reconciled and whatever, and so that's what's so refreshing about it. It's like, oh, okay, they were actually able to do this, but there's just no progress in Magneto's arc at all.
In fact, it's a complete backslide because the Ian McKellen Magneto, and to some degree the First Class Magneto, had a point of view. His whole thing was mutant superiority. It was, we are better than humans. Why should we live in fear of them? We should be calling the shots. That he was a big believer in mutant superiority. This Magneto believes in nothing except, like, he's sad that his family was murdered, even though the movie then sets up he still has family, even though he's not told that he still has family, because why would we say, hey, I'm your son, your whole family isn't dead. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Why would you hold that back?
Right.
For, I don't know, when you get the rights to Scarlet Witch back? Like, I don't get it. Like, what are you waiting for?
They're not getting the rights to Scarlet Witch back. So I found that to be very, very frustrating. That it, again, gives Michael Fassbender, unfortunately, nothing to do. And he's been, you know, a highlight of the last two movies.
Yeah.
We get to a scene where Apocalypse transports them to Auschwitz. And so Bryan Singer can show the first scene from the original X-Men again, which, again, is a great scene. And he's very proud of it, obviously. So then Magneto, using the metal in the earth, destroys Auschwitz. And I'm sitting there thinking, boy, this should be really powerful. I mean, this right. is not only for this character, but just as a symbol, like symbolically watching this as a human being on the planet, watching this horrible, horrible place destroyed, should really mean. And I felt nothing. I just was like, well, that's
right.
Some CGI work you guys did. I didn't feel like the movie did anything to make that moment mean anything, except like that's kind of like Apocalypse being like, so be on my side, I can take you to places that you don't like and you can destroy them.
Right? What'd they do to you? Yeah,
it's more than just a landmark, you know, like right.
And I like the idea of taking him back and whatever.
Yes,
except it doesn't it's theoretically should move his arc forward, except
correct.
It sort of doesn't.
Nope.
Because now he doesn't feel like rejuvenated. He doesn't feel like redeemed in some sort of way. Like it's, I don't know. It's sort of at odds with the conflict that's earlier in the movie for him, where like his wife and child got killed. Like it's not the Nazis that killed his children, you know, it's
right.
just like this larger population who actually knows who he is and they're scared of him. That's why they come with like bows and arrows and stuff instead
right.
of like guns. So it's like a weird like mismatch of like, well, like it's not the Nazis that killed your wife and child. It's like it's a different community. It's a different motivation,
you know, as much as like, I think Bryan Singer is trying to draw some sort of comparison, but the Nazis didn't do what they did because they feared the Jews, you
right.
know, and that's where
right.
these soldiers are coming. That's where humanity is coming
yeah.
from. So you can't make the exact correlation. And I think the movie tries to do that. And I don't think that works.
Yeah. Can we talk about the future of this? Can we call it a franchise?
Oh yeah, I mean okay. they're gonna make more.
Yeah, do you know? Do you happen to know off the top of your head, like how many more movies or how much longer 20th Century Fox has control of the? I don't know.
I'm
like
assuming
two or three more movies. I don't know.
Oh no, I'm assuming it's in perpetuity. Essentially, the way that my understanding that it works is as long as they sort of exercise their option every so many years,
sure, then they can keep it.
Which is why we got that Fantastic Four reboot. Because if they don't make, you know, Sony, I think, lost Ghost Rider because they didn't get a new Ghost Rider movie made.
Sure.
Fox lost Daredevil because they didn't get a new Daredevil. You know, Joe Carnahan was going to make a Daredevil and then it fell apart. Same with Punisher.
Sure.
That's how they lose those options. I think as long as they continue to make X-Men movies, they will hold on to the whatever, you know, the copyright. So there's no end in sight.
Sure. Here's what I like about the idea of the franchise. Maybe not necessarily every episode and every installment. I like the idea. I think I mentioned this earlier. I like the idea that there's a different authorial voice on these movies. I think one of my, although I like the Marvel, the MCU movies, the Avengers oriented movies, I do feel like one of my complaints about that is that it just sort of all feels the same, that there's no like, I don't know, like the lighting's the same, the color palette's the
sure,
same
sure,
for
sure.
everything. And
sure.
it just feels, it gets more and more, it just feels like a TV episode.
Yeah.
Right. That I'm just watching like Marvel, the TV series.
Right,
and it's
lights.
Like, this is the next 2-hour episode that I get to watch that comes out once a year. So I like X-Men because, and again, going back through the backlog of these movies just in the last 48 hours, I was like, I really appreciated that. Oh, it's a much like darker tone generally, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But I like that it's different. Bryan Singer's not always my favorite, but at the same time, I like that he's a different voice. You know, that he has a voice, kind of. That he has like some specific concerns that he's sort of involved with, although,
and I think he really did on the first two movies.
Yeah, it has diminished over.
Yeah,
over
I don't think this movie has any voice.
It's turned into a corporate thing.
Yeah.
I liked that thinking about my favorite Avengers installments. I like it when it's of a specific time and of a specific place. And so I really liked the first Captain America. Not that I like all the Captain Americas, by the way. But what I liked about the first one is that it's so of its time.
Right,
it's like in the 40s. It's a period
movie, right,
piece.
Right, right. Which is how they're doing Wonder Woman too, which is cool.
Nice, nice. That's a good direction. I like that, you know, that Iron Man 3 was... I know people complain about Iron Man 3 for different reasons, but I like that it was of a specific time, of a specific place. And so the X-Men movies that are, like, in the 70s, that are in, like, First Class is of a different place. I like that, too. I really enjoyed that. And so now this is... Then the problem is that now they've sort of clearly have, like, written themselves into a corner where they're like, what's the next thing that we can do?
Right.
What's the next place that we can go necessarily? And so I kind of... And they sort of... Because it's been long enough where they've sort of taken all the villains. So all the cool bad guys are gone. It's like, okay, you knocked out Apocalypse with this one. Like, who's
right.
left? So
right.
when the Stinger came on, my buddy and I were like, okay, well, who's it going to be?
Right.
Like, who's left? We're like, Cable, Strife. And then, you know, they revealed Mr. Sinister, I'm not excited about that either. You know,
I mean, they tried to do Hellfire Club in First Class, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And again, First Class, I think, is the only, not counting, you know, Magneto in the first movie, and Stryker's okay in the second one. I don't know. The villains have not always been great. I would argue that the villain in this movie is maybe the worst they've had,
yeah.
which is, this is the movie that's really built around the villain. But Kevin Bacon in First Class is terrific.
Good, yeah.
yeah, he's so good in that movie.
But it's the appropriate scale, too. Like, his
right,
plan
right, right.
makes sense in
right.
the scale of the movie. And what, so his
they
comeuppance
could do,
makes sense too.
Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. I mean, they've used up so many of those characters, and that's part of the problem too. Is when they just randomly kind of pluck characters for certain reasons, just so that you recognize them, and then don't really do anything with them. You know, there's a throwaway thing in this movie where, like, when we first meet Nightcrawler, who I thought was just such a disappointment. I thought he was just a makeup job, you
sure,
know?
Yeah.
Nothing
and
about
an
that
accent,
character.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we get a little bit of him praying at one point. But when you think about Alan Cumming in X2, you really feel like he had time to develop a character
yeah.
and we really understood who
and there
Nightcrawler
was, room,
was.
And there
yeah.
was. And he got that spectacular opening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, like, you really knew who he was and how he fit into the rest of this group. And this Nightcrawler is just like, there's Nightcrawler. Beast is like, there's Beast. It's
yeah.
No one is anyone in this movie. But where was I going? Like, oh, so there's a scene early on when they're kind of cage fighting, and there's a character that I think supposed to be the Blob. I mean, he's kind of dressed.
Oh, right, the
like
big fat guy, right?
Blob. Blob. They don't call him that, and no. then. So again, if you're going to just use him as a throwaway joke, can you use him later as an actual villain?
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, maybe you can. I don't
sure.
know. But they burn through. Villains, you know, they sort of do Archangel in this movie, and they do it so poorly.
Right. You don't know anything about
no
Angel at all. You don't know his, like, how'd you end up cage fighting?
Right.
And then maybe there's not enough time. Maybe there's not enough, like, it's weird to say there's not enough time in a movie that's 2.5 hours long.
2.5 hours long. Oh,
but
we didn't talk about Havoc dying.
Right. Because no one cares about Havoc.
I mean,
dying.
It's literally like, oh shit, wait, did he die? Oh yeah. I mean, that's how the movie handles it.
Yeah.
Like, Quicksilver is like, pretty sure I got everyone, bro. And it's like, oh no, you didn't. He's dead. And no one's ever like, ooh, that was
oh,
a that sucky
was
mistake. That was a sacrifice that he made. It was nothing. It
I
was
never
just
met
like
him before. Yeah.
You literally almost got everyone except the one guy, and he's dead. So sorry, bro. But like, when Charles Xavier before I wished I had a pad and paper during this movie so I could write down every garbage line of dialogue in this movie, because I was astounded at how bad the dialogue is in this movie. One example being right before he destroys Cerebro, he says, you know, Alex, something, something. Wreak havoc.
Right.
It's like, no, I was already getting right. There's a scene.
Are you
where,
James? Are you Roger Moore from James?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The scene after Magneto's family dies, and he just looks up at the sky and is like, "Is this what you wanted?" I'm just thinking of Jennifer Love Hewitt in I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like, what are you waiting for? It was embarrassing. There's a scene in Moira McTaggart's office where she's explaining, you know, the plot.
Right.
Charles Xavier keeps literally fucking just summarizing what she's saying. Like, I can't think of, there's two examples where
she's so
he literally does it. Like, she says, you know, he could do this, 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 and he goes, an all-powerful mutant. And I want her to be like, yeah, motherfucker, that's what I just said.
Listen.
Right. Or she'll say, like, he's going to bring about the apocalypse. And he's like, the end of all things. Like, we know what apocalypse means. Stop doing that. It's a very, and I hate that scene where they make the joke about X3. It's so shoehorned in. They go to the mall so they could see Return of the Jedi because... so they can make a joke. Well, we all know the third one sucks. Like, fuck you. This is the worst X-Men movie. You're talking about the time periods, and like, this movie tries to, there's a bunch of little references to the 80s, whether it's Sweet Dreams playing in the Quicksilver scene, sure. They go see Return of the Jedi, Nightcrawler's wearing a Michael Jackson jacket,
the car,
some of the stuff that's like on TV, but like, First Class was very much about the 60s, and even told in kind of a bouncy 60s cool style, because Matthew Vaughn's a really good director.
Yeah.
Days of Future Past, I feel like the 70s matters in that story, you know, in the stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
It being set in the 80s has nothing to do with...
no connection to the political climate. There's
really?
No... Right.
Except sort of the nuclear disarmament, but again... It's such a dumb throwaway thing.
Right. It could have been from any period of time.
And then we get that politician that our prayers have been answered at the end. I mean, it's just such a badly written movie. I will say, with the exception of, do we count X-Men Origins Wolverine as an X-Men movie? Or are the two Wolverine movies separate?
Those two Wolverine movies. I think the world's better if we sort of think that. I think we could acknowledge that they exist.
Okay. But I like the second one.
Oh, yeah. I like the Wolverine. That's a good one. Yeah. I like the first, like, two-thirds of that. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the end's not great.
The end just sort of falls flat a little
bit. Becomes RoboCop.
But then I think, it's better if we just end the storyline, just acknowledge that X3 and then Wolverine, the origin.
Okay, so we're not including X-Men Origins Wolverine in our assessment of all of the X-Men movies.
I don't think we should.
It's a separate entity. I just need to make sure that that's clear, because then I can declare X-Men Apocalypse, I think, as the worst X-Men movie.
Yeah, you can make a strong case for it.
If we're throwing Origins in there, then that is worse.
Yeah, that's really just
that's
it
worse.
It's so weird. That movie makes no sense.
It's astoundingly terrible.
It's so
strange.
It's so odd.
Apocalypse is my least favorite. Oddly enough, it did have the effect of making me want to go back and rewatch the first five. So you tried to watch them leading up.
Yeah.
I came out of this and was like, I want to go watch those five X-Men movies that I kind of like to varying degrees.
Yeah, I liked... I really like First Class. Really like Days of... I think the more and more I watch Days of Future Past, the more I like it. I hadn't seen X2 in a really long time.
Yeah.
So just to revisit it was just a whole lot of fun, actually. It was really great. Just to see... Ian McKellen in like full Magneto mode was kind of awesome. I just would rather, I'd like to see Matthew Vaughn do like get another shot at it. I mean, whatever. Or it doesn't even have to be Matthew Vaughn. It just has to be somebody with
I think it should
an
be
idea.
Somebody who's not Bryan Singer.
I think he needs a break. He just needs
I
to
think
go off.
Apocalypse proves that maybe the tank is dry for him.
Right.
I'm glad he got to make Days of Future Past. He kind of came back and redeemed himself and, you know, really kind of brought this universe back together in a way. And I really thought it worked. And Apocalypse has trashed a lot of the goodwill I have towards him in terms of this franchise.
A little bit. Especially when he had so much at his disposal and just it didn't kind of come together. I think I'd like to see a movie that's... I don't want it to be... like a spin-off to the point where it's a Wolverine movie. We're only going to do Wolverine things.
No.
But I wouldn't mind.
That was the plan at one point. They were going to do a solo Magneto movie.
Sure.
Which if it was the Fassbender Magneto, I would see
that. Oh, yeah.
But
I'm all about it.
Yeah. I don't need a solo Ian McKellen Magneto movie.
No, I think he wouldn't be.
Magneto eats dinner at 4:00.
It's called Mr. Holmes. He's just retired in the countryside. He's got this like red helmet on. This little kid from next door is like, "What did you used to be?" I'm sorry. What did you used to be?
Nice.
But like, I would like for it to just be less characters doing more things instead of more characters less things.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you want to make Mystique such a big part of this thing, then like, fine. Like, just follow Mystique around.
I suspect
around or
Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know what her contract is, but she's done three, and that's usually what they sign. Sure. It's like kind of three movie deals. I suspect they're done with Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I don't.
And they might be done with Fassbender and McAvoy, too. I honestly don't know unless they re-up. Fassbender, I don't know if he will. But anyway, anything left about Apocalypse?
I guess not. I just want I'm happy that there is – well, not – this is not what I'm happy about for Apocalypse. But I'm happy that there's like a – like another Marvel – like a different – like still Marvel, but like a different voice. Like a different like – aesthetic. It's kind of why I like Guardians. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy works on so many different levels, but one of the things I really liked about it was that it's just a totally separate, totally different group of people, and they're just doing their own thing. And I know there's talk about like, oh, hey, we'll start like crossing those things over. And I'm like, no, why do they have to? Just like let them exist, let them coexist in the same thing, but just like separate. Like, why do they have to like bump into each other or whatever? And like, I don't know. I don't like that. So I don't know. I like that there's a story that's a little bit darker, that's a little bit not as like peppy and cheery. Not that the Avengers movies are like these cheerful, like
sure.
You know, Saturday morning stuff. But I don't know. I liked it. I'm hoping in the future that I feel more optimistic about about a different X-Men release. I don't want to feel, and I feel bad that both of us sort of like didn't feel great about the trailer going in, and you know, for the most part, had the movie sort of met our, you know, expectations of it not being so great. But I don't want to feel that in the future because I really like the stories. I like the characters, and I'm hoping that we don't have to feel this way, you know, for another installment.
Yeah, it just needs a better iteration, possibly a different filmmaker, some new blood maybe might help.
Mr. Sinister will solve the problems, guys.
Yeah, see, that's not the answer.
No, I don't think it is.
Just do these stories that we already know. No. I mean, if nothing else, this movie has made me want to spend time with the X-Men, whether it's reading my old X-Men comics or watching the other movies that I liked. Maybe it's just to get the taste out. I don't know. But
yeah, I might go home and like watch Wolverine. No, actually.
We've had four comic book movies this year, I would say.
Only?
Yeah. Well, so far.
It's only June.
And I would say we're 2 for 4 right now.
Which ones did you like?
I think Deadpool is good enough.
I liked Deadpool.
And I liked Civil War.
Yeah.
Did not love Batman v Superman. Not love Apocalypse.
I'm on the same page with you.
We still have at least two to go. We have Suicide Squad and then Doctor Strange.
Suicide Squad looks better and better.
Yeah.
The more I see of it.
So we'll see. Maybe both of those will be good and we'll be at what, 4 for 6?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But bummer on Apocalypse. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Happy June Exploitation. Please start watching old exploitation movies or any kinds of movies you want to watch. You know, we have an Apocalypse Day. Typically, that means like post-apocalyptic, Mad Max, or The Road Warrior. But you could certainly watch X-Men Apocalypse.
Or you could watch Apocalypto.
The great thing, absolutely. See, the great thing about June Exploitation is anything counts.
Yeah,
there was some discussion on the site over the weekend about like, well, can I watch this for Bugs Day? And like, can I watch Squirm? Those aren't really bugs, but you know. And I just wrote back like, hey, if you're ever in doubt, anything counts, you know, like I'd rather you participate watching something you want to watch than force yourself to watch something you're not into just to match the category.
You guys are super cute with your very conscientious rule following.
Right? I love it.
Wait, is this okay? We're like,
Yeah, sure. But I love
it. What authority do we have in your life?
Right. Listen, people respect the thing and they want to follow along, and I appreciate that. So happy June Exploitation. You can always find our website at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie or on Facebook or on Instagram. Review us in the iTunes store if you haven't. If you're a fan of the show, we always appreciate it. It helps us out. You can donate to F This Movie by going to fthismovie.net. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Did I forget anything?
We're on Stitcher.
Yes. Anyway, thank you, Mark, for talking about X-Men Apocalypse.
No problem, man. Thanks for making a new world with me. I appreciate it.
A better one.
A better one.
One without Bryan Singer.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.